But once again, we arrived back from Haiti yesterday. We had 8 nights, just an excellent trip there. And I want to run you through just kind of an overview of the trip. I'll do that with some slides. Then I think we have at least 3 team members that will be sharing some of their stories from our trip. And my message will be based around the trip to Haiti as well. So, Russ, if you run the slides, I'll make a few comments here or there. I don't know how well you can see it, but I just love this t-shirt. Every once in a while you see someone, there's another one that's coming up. That's Abraham Lincoln with sunglasses and a skateboard. And something tells me the guy that's wearing it has no idea what it's really about. But I told him I'm from the land of Lincoln. I don't think that made any impression on him whatsoever. Next slide. You got to have a slide of Thelma. I'm sorry I don't have slides of everyone, but everybody needs a Thelma. And that's Melinda. A lot of you know Melinda Cribero. And we did have a nursing component to the trip. Sadira, who is Jocelyn's wife, I'll show you a photo of Jocelyn in a moment, makes rounds at our 4 schools. New Hope has 4 schools. And so our nursing crew, which was Debbie, who's a friend of Thelma's, who came along on the trip, did a great job. And they went to the 4 different schools. And I'm sure at times they were frustrated and there's communication issues, and sometimes they wish they could do more, but they made a big difference. So, next slide. A lot of you sponsor children, and they used to build these big nutrition centers to feed them. Now they just figured out it's more practical to just cook the food. They bring it right to the classroom. They get a great portion of food. In the past year, they have been using the food from Feed My Starving Children, which is better for the children. They like to add beans. They want to do it their own way, and so they make up a savory dish. It smells really good. I didn't try it this time down there, but those are just some of the sponsor kids receiving food. Next slide. I just could not help but to take this photo. One of the things that I did on this trip, and I didn't know I was going to, is that I helped distribute funds to the sponsor children. If you sponsor a child, $12 a month goes to the family. They hand it in an envelope to the child to take it home. Now, I know some people are thinking, well, what's going to happen to that child on the way home? I have never heard a complaint of a child having the money taken from them. There really isn't a police force in Haiti, which means that in a community, they have to police themselves. I was reading in this book, Divine Collision, in Uganda, that if someone were to steal someone's goat, you don't want to hear what that village is going to do to that person, because they police themselves. So I was handing envelopes to kids. Now, Paul's going to share in a little bit, Paul Jebson. And he ended up being with me when we did that. The only reason that I think that came about, the day that we were working in Limonade, that Saturday, the first day that we were there, I guess it was the second day that we were there, that we worked at Limonade, we all gathered there, and then a group was going out to SEMA to do some woodwork on the church to help with the roof. Randy was kind of heading that up. And somehow the pickup truck took off without Paul and I did do that, so Paul became, well, God meant for him to be forgotten. I think at first he might have been a little bit hurt that they left me here. They don't realize what a good carpenter I am, but Paul was meant to be there. And this was just one child, one of the probably 1,000 children that I handed an envelope to, with money that comes from good people like you, and it helps strengthen a family in Haiti. Next slide. Last Sunday morning, I preached in Barrier Battant. And this was a theme for the trip. I'd never preached at Barrier Battant before. Of our 5 main churches, it's the only one that doesn't have a school and a feeding center. And by definition, then, most people don't visit it. Most Americans, when they come down, want to see kids. They want to see the children. They want to see a feeding center. They want to see a school. And so when I was talking to Brent, the director, in the previous weeks before the trip, we talked about where I would go, where the team would go. And so when he said, we talked about 3 options, places that I haven't preached at recently. And when he mentioned Barrier Battant, he said, they don't get teams usually. In essence, nobody ever goes there. And I said, that settles it. We're going there. I think this trip thematically was, we saw a lot of people on the fringe. We saw a lot of people that were forgotten, and that God drew us to those people, to the least. And I'm so glad that we went to Barrier Battant. They received us so well. This was my interpreter. And the funny thing was, when I was looking at him up on the stage before I got up to speak, and I said to Heidi, he reminds me of Morgan Freeman. And so I said that, and the joke was lost on, I think, everybody there except and the pastor of the church. They kind of got a kick out of that. I mean, he's not identical, but he reminds me of him. The next day, he's our interpreter as we're going to the schools. He's helping with the nurses. Can you read what his hat says? Morgan. Like, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, I think he had that hat long before I thought he looked like Morgan Freeman. That man blessed me from the moment I walked into that church. He came over, greeted me warmly. Never has an interpreter come up to me right before a service and says, can you give me some idea what your message is about? And I felt that he communicated powerfully the message that God gave me to share. He was into it. The other thing I want to mention about him, you can't tell from this photo, and I don't know how it happened, but he's missing an ear. And it's obvious that he wasn't born that way because there's a scar across the side of his face. I would think that would be a difficult thing to own in life. And then he was a man that had such a dignity, there was such a presence about him. His name is Joel. Love that guy. Next slide. This is my wife. I don't know if you know who she is. Her name's Heidi. Children love to play with your hair in Haiti. And guess one day I just snapped that shot. I won't show you many of the photos because there's one of us on the team that has a similar color hair to mine. And love to play with Paul's hair. And I got a bunch. I took some live photos, you know, those ones that are like a second long so they get the motion. They were always playing with his hair. And he loved every minute of it. Next. So I got kissed by three people on this trip. This is the 88-year-old. We went back to distribute food. That's one of the other things that we did. To three communities. Again, the more forgotten communities. And Jock Lynn would take us out. I'll show you a picture in a moment. And he says he does this regularly. I mean, he goes through huge bags of rice. Didn't they say 75 bags of rice per month? To take out to elderly. That's just the rice, not the oil and the beans and the bouillon. He takes them out to people that cannot work. If there's people that are asking for food that can work, he doesn't give it to them. And there's people that almost threaten him. His mission is to get it out to people who have no other way to support themselves. And we got to be a part of that. This church got to pay for it. In multiple ways, this church and people from this church paid for that food to go out to the most needy folks. We were way off the beaten path when we met this woman. And there was about five of us guys that went back. I was the last one in row, and I wasn't going to miss out. She came up and kissed all of us. So I was the last one. So I'm estimating she was 88. So I got a kiss from an 88-year-old. I got a couple kisses from a 58-year-old. I'll just you do the math on that one. Next slide. That's our sponsor child. 4 years ago, we met in Boss Aviation, which is the most urban church. And I think people really got that feel that we were in the city. And it's landlocked. And anyway, we met this girl 4 years ago. She was very shy, had our picture taken, and I think 2 years ago we saw her again. Her name's Radisha. And this year, when we had some gifts, and Heidi did a great job selecting some gifts for her, including a dress. And so we sat down with her and had a picture taken. We had an interpreter. And I asked her, I said, do you remember us? And I thought for sure she'd say no. But she said, she lit up. She said, yeah, I remember you guys. And so we gave her the gifts, and she leaned over, and she gave me a kiss. I mean, you talk about making your day. And then she leaned over and she gave Heidi a kiss. I mean, this is a shy little girl. So then later, when we're distributing the envelopes to children, she came forward. And I'm like, now I'm going to give her a hug and a kiss. And I got to embarrass her in front of all of her classmates. The other thing was kind of private, but now I got to embarrass her. And then she came back with her dress on. That's the dress that Heidi bought for her. And she just had a smile on her face. And we asked if we could go meet her family. She has four siblings. We didn't get a chance to go in the home, but that's their front door. Their front door is a sheet. And we got to meet her father, who, he was smiling except for when the camera was in. Once I put up the phone, then he got really serious. But he was very happy to meet us. But that little girl is a joy, and that's her mom and her baby sister. Next slide. So I got kids, an 8-year-old, a 58-year-old, and an 88-year-old on the trip. I'll just leave it at that. Next. I just love this image. This was a guy that worked with us River, where we stayed. And so many people have these t-shirts. I don't think he has any idea who Marilyn Monroe is. I have to get a picture of this man. He was a hard worker. He was working on other things, laying block, doing concrete. But we had some special tasks to do. And when we needed special help, he just seemed to know to come over and help, as far as I could tell. But I loved this image and just wanted to share it with you. You might remember that 2 years ago, I went up to the Citadel, which they say it's 7 kilometers up. And every year. How many of you understand that things get steeper, ice gets slipperier, gets steeper every year? Coming down, Books will remember this. Coming down 2 years ago, I didn't have my walking stick with me. And I'm like, I'm fine. But it started to drizzle. And so that road, which is very steep, has a lot of these white rocks in it. Those white rocks, when water hit them, my shoes was like ice. And so Lulu was my guide. And I just love it. I put it this way. Everybody needs a Lulu, okay? Because when I was coming down, I was slipping. And he's like, trust me, trust me, trust Lulu. And so it took about a mile of, and I almost went down 3 times. And I would have really hurt myself. The last, 2 miles, I went down holding Lulu's hand. And he held me up 5 times I would have gone down. And there's Haitians walking by. They would walk by us very seriously, and then they'd burst out laughing afterwards. It's like, that boy needs him to carry him down the mountain. But I couldn't remember his name. We were about to go up to the Citadel, and then he's just like, Lulu. And I'm like, that's it. So he stayed with us the whole time. He walked me down. I didn't have to hold his hand. I brought my stick this year. But I put his picture in there because I spoke about it, but sometimes in life, you need a Lulu. You need someone you can lean on. Sometimes you might be embarrassed and say, I'm just not strong enough. I mean, I've hiked all over the world, but I couldn't get down without falling down. I needed a Lulu. Sometimes you do too. Next slide. I think I've got a couple more. This is Jock Lynn up at the Citadel. If he graduated from high school, I believe he would have done so in 1989. And I'm going to come back to him in my message. He is our main person on the ground in Haiti. He does so many different things. When I was there, Brent, who's the director, would text me most every day, ask Jock Lynn to pick, ask him to do that, this, because he's our feet and hands on the ground. Some people call him the mayor of Haiti. Not the mayor of Milo or a town, just the mayor of Haiti. He knows everybody. And when you think you're in a difficult situation, it's just, you call on Jesus and Jock Lynn, okay? In that order. But often, it's not really a problem. We thought we ran into a problem. I'll tell you, if you know a problem we thought we ran into on a Sunday, ask me afterwards. He got us out of that. Might have one more. Yeah. Is that the last one of mine, Russ? Right. Good. Perfect. So when I was in Haiti in 1989, there was a young lady on our trip. Her name was, well, we'll call her Larissa because that's her name. So some of you know Larissa. And there's this little boy. He's about this big. And his ears kind of stuck out. And his name's Picas. And a lot of times there's all these beautiful children around. And I love Picas. And I hope he's not listening on the internet. We're friends on Facebook. He wasn't one of the beautiful kids. But to Larissa, he was. And so she started to sponsor him. And Jock Lynn, one afternoon, we were in Milo. We were doing the photography. That's the other big thing that the team did, is we took pictures of all the children in all the schools for sponsorship and et cetera. And a lot of the Kansas City crew helped up, but we helped them. And so we got to meet so many children in so many different ways. But he brought Picas over. Picas works at the hospital there now. And I was able to bring a gift down from Larissa. And when I told him that I had a gift from Larissa, this isn't the picture when that happened, but that's what happened. He just smiled. Just after all these years, that was 1989. I'll come back and say a little bit more about Picas. So I'm going to ask Thelma to go first, because you've got an image, right? Are you up for going first? I mean, sure. Sort of second. You were eloquent in the shower? You didn't put that on Facebook, did you? Okay.
I'll be all scrambled now. I came home yesterday. Just a comment on Jock Lynn. One of the things that was really difficult to do in Haiti is get gasoline. And we were in a van that was almost empty of gas. And the station had a little bit of gas, and we pulled into the station, and there were a bunch of motorcycles lined up waiting for gas. And Jacqueline pulls in, starts pumping, keep going. We wound up getting 20 gallons of gas, a full tank, enough to get us through the week, because Jacqueline knew the owner. And we ended up waiting, and we got 20 gallons, and everybody else. So that was follow-up on that. Anyway, yesterday morning, I woke up in Haiti. From there, we flew to Chicago in about 6 hours flying time. Rode home on a paved highway. I walked into my house, flipped on the light switch, turned up the heat, got a drink from the refrigerator. I brushed my teeth with water from the sink. I used the bathroom, and I flushed it. I climbed in my bed with my electric blanket on, and I went to sleep. A Haitian can't do any of those things. They have no plumbing. They have no electricity. They have no safe water to drink. The roads are diabolical. It's such a contrast. I wanted to put up a picture of Deb. We put Deb up there. Okay, so Deb and I have been oncology nurses together for over 20 years, and she heard us talking about the trip, and she said, I want to go, and with 4 weeks to come for the trip, she showed up and was part of the team. So she's not here today, but I wanted to acknowledge Deb because she worked her little buns off. So we went down there, and our role was to provide some health care to the school kids. And over the course of the week, we both sat there going, what are we doing here? Why? What are we making a difference? We're two oncology nurses. These kids they don't have lung cancer. I know nothing about pediatrics. But yet we sat there and we said, we're putting a little Band-Aid on things. And actually, they don't even have Band-Aids in Haiti. So when kids had a cut, there was nothing to put on it. We had one little child, we gave an antibiotic and said, now keep this refrigerated. And then said, they can't do that. I don't know if this medicine's going to spoil. But we kept trying to convince ourselves that we were making a difference. Tuesday night, I got sick. My digestive system went into hyperdrive. So I spent 2 days confined to quarters. Deb got sick Wednesday night and spent Thursday in bed. And so we're like, what are we here for? And I had a lot of time to think about it and questioning, you know, why? What am I doing? But then we thought about the ones that we'd made a difference to and how the first day we were having clinic and it was going to be, you're going to see half a dozen kids from each classroom. Okay, I can handle that. Suddenly there's 50 kids running around the church screaming, and then there's lines of them lined up in the chairs waiting for us to see them, and I'm going, oh! And we said, okay, so each one came up. They had a lot of head fungus. Everybody had bellyache, I think because probably not eating enough. A lot of them had not had any breakfast. When I asked them when they last ate, it was yesterday. And they had skin rashes, just minor things that we couldn't fix. We gave them vitamins, we gave them deworming pills, and we gave them all smiles. And I think the smiles were probably the most important part of what we gave because it was acknowledging the real need that they need to be, see their needs acknowledged, because there's nobody taking care of these kids. There's no health care system in Haiti. You can't run to the doc in the box at 2 a.m. if your kid has a fever. But again, I sat and I thought about, you know, what am I doing here? I've been blessed in my life to travel to a lot of other countries and seen a lot of people living in conditions that none of us would tolerate. And yet Haiti is by far the worst of all of those. I think about the images in my mind, the little boy with his shirt on, shoes on, no pants. The lady sitting at a card table on the side of the road with a pile of mangoes on the table that she's trying to sell just to get a little something else for her family. All of the little storefront porches. A lot of the houses, which are, the average house in Haiti is probably smaller than a one-car garage. And you may have five people sleeping in one room with one bed. And on the front of the house is a little area about 4 or 5 feet deep that's their store where they sell whatever product they have that they're trying to do. So they're living with such minimal support. Next door to the mission where we stayed in relative luxury was a nursing school. And at the nursing school, periodically during the day, you'd hear singing and laughing coming from there, and they just were having a great time, which I don't recall having in nursing school. But I thought, that's hope. There's hope. These people are hoping to come out from the little tiny ones like this. They look at you, and they haven't lost hope. And the grown-ups going to nursing school haven't lost hope. And we're there to meet some of those needs. This morning as I was getting ready, I looked on my dresser, and I had one of those little tiny frogs. Some of you remember we gave them out a few years ago, Fully Rely on God. And I thought, Thelma, maybe that's the message, is you're just supposed to rely on God. So the trip was not what I had planned, but I know it was what God had planned for me. And I'm still not sure, you know, did I make a big difference? You know, one of the things I know is that I can share with you. I've got stories and I've got pictures, and I could bore you to tears. And we all could, because we all shared in seeing these kids and the smiles and the hugs and the playing with the hair. And it changes you, and it makes you think, you know, maybe my role is to encourage other people, the support financially that we can provide. You know, I sat there and I thought, Thelma, you are too old to be doing this after hiking up down these roads. Like, you know, maybe next year you'll just send money, or maybe I'll encourage somebody who's younger than me to go. But there's a role for everybody, I think, in supporting this mission or some other similar missions, because the needs are out there and they are tremendous. And I'm going to shut up now.
Thank you, Thelma. I can't imagine it was any more eloquent in the shower. Where's Sheila? Come forth. She's got props.
Thank you. So, this was my first mission trip. I'd always thought about going on one. I never acted on it, but when I heard Paul talk about it, it was something that God just reached out. I felt like you just reached out and grabbed me and said, you're doing it. And for me to not only go on my first mission trip with people, it was 15 people. I didn't know anybody except Jesus and Randy, and went to a country that I had never really even known much about, was my big leap of faith. And it was probably the best thing I ever did. To be honest with you, I had always thought this child sponsorship thing, I'd always heard about it and kind of thought, you know, when you hear about things like United Way or Salvation Army, where a lot of these things that they say you sponsor, you always think a lot of the money goes to administrative costs or payroll. And so I've always been on the fence about, do I support a child? But when we got to Haiti and I saw it in action, and I saw how it really works, that the money really does make a difference, it changed something in me. And so now Randy and I are actually supporting a child. We actually have three children that we're supporting. And to give you an idea of a typical day of what our day looked like, is we woke up in the morning, we had a group prayer, group breakfast, and then we all went to a school, and some of us broke up into doing photography, and Thelma and Debbie and Melinda went and did the medical clinic, and I kind of bounced back and forth because I don't really have one specialty. I just sort of go where I'm needed, because I can do a little bit of everything, but nothing really well. So I was able to find my place, and like Thelma said, everybody has a role. Everybody did have a role, but the biggest role was just making a difference in those child's lives. There's so many of them, and they crowd around you like I couldn't even believe how just happy they were, just a hold your hand or hold your hair. It was just amazing. And one thing that struck me is these children are they're just children. They're children like our children. They laugh, they play, they tease each other, joke about us, the Blancs. They're just children, but they are children that need a little bit more support than our children do. They're just a little bit less fortunate than our children. So the whole child sponsorship thing took on a new meaning for me when I saw that they're just children, but they need us. They need us more than we need them. But that's what I first thought. And then after I got to spend time with them, I'm like, you know what? I need this too. So I'm going to encourage everybody, if you haven't sponsored a child yet, talk to one of us that do, or talk to somebody on the trip, because it does make a difference in your life as much as it does their life. And you need this as much as they need it. But after we did the photography of updating people with their sponsor child, taking the pictures and just spending time with them and doing the medical clinic, we actually got a chance to make those little rice, beans, and oil packets, sort of like the Feed My Starving Children, but bigger in quantity so that it would last them maybe. How long would a packet of food last? Depends. Yeah, I think it probably depends on how many are in the household. But we actually had the opportunity to walk for miles, it felt like, up rocky terrain, roads, stepping over garbage, to knock on, can't even say knock on doors because knock on sheets, the villagers sit out in chairs in front of their house because they don't have a TV, they don't have anything to do all day. So they see us coming, and we got a chance to go in and see where they live, which is just like less than the size of the ladies' bathroom downstairs, with one full-size bed in which they probably have to sleep in shifts because there's just not enough bed space for each family member. But that's where we really felt like we made a difference, because they were so appreciative. We also had backpacks of flip-flops, and I think maybe some shirts or something to hand out. And there was a man, he probably was about in his 20s, but life's been hard to them, and he looked maybe about 40. But we gave him flip-flops, and you know, that was the first pair of shoes he ever had. So things like that, just getting to see not only the difference we make in the child's life, but the adults who need it. So we did that. We walked to like the remotest villages. We got to see and people, and it was funny because Paul had mentioned how you see the people in t-shirts, and it's all, you know, when we donate t-shirts and we don't wear them anymore, and they get them and they don't know what they mean. But I did see one lady who was wearing a Star Wars t-shirt, and I thought that was great. I had to take a picture of her and send it to my kid, who is a Star Wars fan. But those things, like giving somebody shoes for the first time, or giving somebody a meal in a bag. And now if somebody handed me a bag of rice and beans and oil, I'd be like, I don't know what to do with that. You know, do I? They were so grateful. Like, they know that this is their food. I would be like, why are you giving me rice and beans? I could just go to McDonald's. But these are things that are life-changing for them, but they're also life-changing for me. So I think the other thing that was big for me was, again, I didn't know anybody on this trip except Jesus and Randy. So to walk in and know that you have to sleep with, you know, I had Thelma as a roommate. It was great, though. So sharing a room and sharing a bathroom and sharing close, tight quarters with people lifts you up spiritually. You pray with the people, you eat with the people, you share. It was just one of the greatest experiences of my life. And I look so forward to next year when Randy and I can go out and see our sponsor children. And, you know, it's not just something that we're going to do that we can say, oh, we've done this trip and we're done. This is something we can do something every year for these kids and look forward to seeing them every year. So you don't just sponsor somebody and go on the trip and move on with your life. it's a foundation and there's building blocks and we'll build on it and hopefully we'll get more children and add to our family. And so I just encourage you, if you have not thought about it, to think about it. If you can't sponsor a child, to try going on the trip. It was just an awesome experience. And I know that not only did it change our lives, but it definitely changed the children's lives. And I have 15 new friends. So that's one of the best things. So.
Thank you, Sheila, and support crew. Shortly before the trip, a new friend of mine, Paul, walked out of church. I don't know what month it was, but I said something in the message. I'm still not exactly sure what it was, but he was walking out and he said, "That's it. I'm going to Haiti." I'm not exactly sure why, but anyway, I'd like to invite Paul to come and share. And just because he got left behind by the pickup truck and by, we spent a lot of time together. Paul?
So, I was the old man on the trip, and maybe not capable of doing some of the stuff that others did, but I was out of my comfort zone. I knew I was out of my comfort zone when I signed up for the trip, and that was new to me. I'm the guy that, "Oh, you're going to Haiti? Oh, no problem. Here's a grand, do with it what you need, you know, and..." "Oh, you got this project? Oh, no, I'd love to help you. Here you go." But goals there? No, that was not my cup of tea. So we left. We had the trip down there. We got in the airport, and first thing they did, "All right, all of you, $10. "What are we paying $10? "Oh, that's the tourist fee." So everybody got to pony up $10 just to get in the country. Then we go and have all of our suitcases opened. And they saw all the toothbrushes and medicine and socks and flip-flops. "Well, we want $300 for you to be allowed to bring all this stuff into the country." So Jacqueline, who knows everybody, the mayor, I think he got him down to $0, and we were on our way. And so as we got in the trucks, I'm thinking, "Oh, what am I getting myself into here? This, I've only been here a half an hour, and so far we've just been shaken down." And so then we got to Deep River, and it was way more than I expected. The folks that run Deep River, he's from New Jersey, came down here. They've been down many times, but he decided, his wife actually finally went along with the program, but they came down and they built this big, beautiful house in about 6 months, and I think it's been 5 years now. Having us here was kind of a blessing for them because of the political turmoil the last couple of years. I noticed when I signed the guest book that was dated 2019, we were only the fourth group that's been here since January of 2019 because mission people or groups just weren't going there anymore. So that was a blessing. They have another group coming this week to pick up on some of the work that we did, putting the roof on the church, and just all the things that we did. Yes, the little girls just love to play with my gray hair. It was, and they just wanted hugs and to hold your hands. And another weird, it's not weird anymore, but a different cultural thing they had was not too uncommon for two men to be standing like this together. And that's just a sign of friendship among the men. They would sit there and carry on a conversation while holding hands. And that was different. But you got used to it right away. And the kids, they want to hold your hand. You might be walking around with two children in each hand and two more hanging on to each arm. And that's how you try and maneuver yourself through the school or whatever. The first day was probably the most physical work that the crew did. We went to church in Luminad, and by the estimation, we treated 4,000 linear feet of wood so that they could use that to build a roof on another church. Now, before I left, I think just within the week before I left, I happened to have an extra ticket for the Hawks game. And Paul came with, along with a buddy of mine who's a general contractor downtown, and they're kind of making fun of me. What are you going to do on the trip, Paul? I said, Tony, you of all people should know, every job needs a foreman. So we actually had, it worked out good. We had like four guys carrying the boards that were to be treated out of the church. They'd stack them up against the pickup truck. We had two stations with six people on each side doing like 4 feet of board each and then flipping them over and doing the other side. And then two other guys took them away so they could dry. And Paul and I were carrying them from the truck to them. And what I thought might take us till dark, we were done in about four and a half hours that day. And it was just how much got done was amazing. And then I think I got some pictures too, don't I? I'll go through those briefly. So this is the young boy that I adopted. He was in one of the third classrooms I was into. And it's unfortunate they do it that way. And I think we change it up during the week. But the first day Paul and I went into the classroom, the principal would call out the name, the child would come up and get his envelope with his $12 for the month. And this guy didn't get one. So he was the second one I adopted that day. He was not sponsored. He is now. And that's the first one that we sponsored. And she, when we came into her classroom, as soon as Paul handed out the first envelope, her head went down like this on her table. I knew then she wasn't getting one. And it brought me to tears. So she sponsored. We later found out she's basically lives in an orphanage. She may or may not be an orphan. We found out her dad might have went to the Dominican Republic, but she's there, and they taught her her first words in English, Papa. So she's a cutie. I can't wait to see him again. Next slide. So this is the crew here working on all the lumber. That's the church in the far background. They brought all the wood. We had to use a couple of church pews that we covered with cardboard, and that was the start of it, because I can see there's none drying yet, or they're just carrying it there. Next slide. And that is the team every day. For about 4 days, we had I think we had four of those giant bags of rice, one bag of beans, bouillon, and oil, and that's the crew putting together the bags that we would deliver with Jocelyn during the day. And that's Jocelyn and Luigi. They were the drivers and bodyguards at one point, and Paul has talked about Jocelyn. I could talk about him for a half an hour, but these trips would almost be impossible without him. Next slide. Paul did work last Sunday, so you don't have to dock him any pay. There he is with the interpreter. And I was amazed when we had the church with CASA, how the interpretation went when Paul preached that day. And I said, wow, that's pretty good. Well, this was even better. So We went through that, and that was last Sunday. Next slide. This is at the corner where we kind of turn down the road to the compound. I've been to Biker Week in Sturgeon, and there is not a quarter of the motorcycles that we saw just in Capetia. They're all 125 or 150 cc's. That's really small. My Harley is 1200 cc's. And they only have one cylinder on these things. And we did see a few with five aboard, some with four aboard, most with three aboard. And if you're looking for a taxi, this is your taxi. And not any in this picture, but the other thing they have is like a three-wheeled deal that's made that way, and it's got a little cover on the back. Those hold about six people in the back, plus another couple of hundred pounds of rice or beans or whatever on top of the roof. I've seen during the week these with giant saddlebags that had like four bags of rice, two on each side, carrying them to wherever. I saw another young man with six huge, like this blocks of ice, three on each side, going to deliver ice to the people. They'd knock off their chunk for their cooler, and that was it. But next slide. That's the last one. It was eye-opening. It was wonderful. I can't wait to go back.
Thanks, Paul.
Last night, as it got later, I kept turning to Paul, and we got the ride back from the airport to, he lives right down the street. I kept adding on to the number of minutes I wanted him to share, which meant I had to preach less. He understood exactly what I meant. I do want to take a few minutes, share a couple of stories and a passage of scripture, and then we'll wrap up. Let me just pray for a moment. Father, you're so good to us. And I thank you for each and every person who was a part of this trip. And many can't be here today. They live in other cities. But I know there are those that are here, and some people aren't comfortable with a microphone in their hand. But I know that you did profound things in our hearts. And I want to thank you for the people that were at home that were praying for us, because that energized us. That gave us the eyes to see, the heart to feel, and the will to do. Father, thank you that we are all part of your body. Speak to us from your word. Amen. I went to Haiti for the first time in 1981. I just graduated from college. And during the course of our stay, maybe once every other week, and we were there in Haiti for 6 weeks, we would go to Christophe's Hotel. And I love Christophe's Hotel. It was Napoleon Bonaparte's sister's home. And it's very quaint. I've got a swimming pool. Actually, Deep River has a swimming pool, so no big deal when we go to Christophe's now. But we went there for lunch after church. I like to go there because of the historical value, and they have good food, and it's fine. But when I was there in 1981, I was out by the pool, and I was talking to a guy, an American, a little bit older than I was. I was 21 at the time. And I asked him what he was doing. And he said that he was providing jobs for Haitians. He lived in a boat off the coast, and he was providing jobs for Haitians. We didn't go to that, but he did what we were doing. Over the years and going on mission trips, and that was, I think, my fourth one, that if I told non-Christians that we're going to evangelize people and use Christianese, people would be like, whatever. You know, they wouldn't like it. But I learned that on that trip, in preparation, we were going to build a nutrition center. A feeding program we're talking about. That built a nutrition center that would feed 500 children a day. And I learned that it doesn't matter who you talk to. You can talk to an atheist. When you tell them that you're going to be feeding children, they're like, that's awesome, man. I mean, I had people say, kind of like, I'm not into what you're into, but like, my heart's with you on this. So I share that with this guy standing by the pool. And he looks at me and he says, you realize you're part of the problem. I said, what? He said, man, it's survival of the fittest. If you feed these children that would otherwise die, then they're going to perpetuate and they're going to have children, and it's just going to make the problem worse. He said, I'm providing jobs for people so that they can get out of this mess. But he's saying that we were making it worse by feeding these children. Well, I was taken aback by it. And I remember what I said to him, though, and I paraphrased something from the words of Jesus from Matthew 25. And at the conclusion of my time, I will share those words in their exact nature. But I looked at him and I said, sir, you may not be able to identify with this, but I believe that when my life is over, I'm going to have to give account of my life to my Creator. And one of the things he said is, that if there are people that are hungry, that you give them something to eat. If you have the power to give someone food that otherwise they could starve to death, that he'll hold me accountable for that. I see that I have a choice. And I was dumbfounded and I kind of went away. I want to share a couple of other stories and some things from Haiti. And I'm actually going to take out just a few things this morning and make it a little bit shorter. I finished a book shortly before going on the trip. Bob Goff is a guy I've read a couple of books by. I'm reading a devotional by him now. But he did the foreword for a book by this guy by the name of Jim Gash. Jim Gash wrote a book called Divine Collision. And in the book, it tells the story of him going to Uganda and how he gets involved in helping this young boy, Henry, and gets him literally out of prison and It's an amazing story, and I have a copy of the book if you want to borrow it. I highly recommend the book. It'd make a great movie. And the book reads like a novel. But in the book, at one point, someone tells the story. They say, this is just like Starfish on the Beach. And he just nods, and he's like, yeah. And he's thinking, you know, I know Jonah and the fish. I know Jesus fed the 5,000. I know all the Bibles. What's the starfish? And then finally, he says, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't get it. The guy says, oh, well, there's the story of all these wash up on the beach and the tide goes out and, well, they're going to die there on the beach, and there's a little boy that comes along and he picks up the starfish and he throws it back in the water. He does that every few feet. And there's this cynical old man that sees it happen. He comes to the boy. He says, young man, you're not making any difference. There's thousands and thousands of starfish. The little boy just looks at him, picks up the starfish, throws it in. He said, for that one, I made a difference. And Jim Gash got it. And Gash, throughout the book, and his website now, I think, is throwingstarfish.com or something. Something had to do with starfish. But he said, when I was younger, he's a Christ follower, but he'd say, I was like the cynical old man because I would look at it analytically. And I get the analytical side. And there are times you can just say, I mean, what's the point? What difference can we make? But at some point, and Gash realized that he became the boy that believed that he can make a difference and picked up starfish and threw them back in. So I've told you two stories about the man beside the pool and about Jim Gash. I want to say a few other things about a few people, and then I'm going to come back to both of those stories. When I was in Haiti, I read a number of things by Bob Goff. I just want to share just a couple of them. And they stood out to me because the chapter that I was going through for February with these devotionals really centered around love. Let me just give you some of the titles of some of the chapters. Loving people the way Jesus did is great theology. See, sometimes we want to study theology, but Jesus simply wants us to love people. We grow where we're loved, not where we're merely informed. You know, we live in a Western culture where knowledge is king, and where if we know stuff, we think that we've got something. But the Apostle Paul learned to communicate to people. He said, knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. That was said from today what would be a Rhodes Scholar, from a genius. But he had to learn that just being informed doesn't mean anything if it's devoid of love. Goff says, give away inexplicable amounts of love with tremendous courage. Loving people the way Jesus did means a life of being constantly misunderstood. When you love everybody, and I don't have time to go into detail, but I know people in Haiti that don't get along. I hope the team didn't pick up on some of the things that I know of different organizations and stuff. But to me, I just want to be the person that's like in the Civil War that wears the gray jacket and the blue pants. You know, the only problem with that is you get shot at from both sides. That's what Goff is saying here. He's like, loving the way Jesus did means a life of being constantly misunderstood. Jesus loved everybody. He loved the Romans, and he loved the downtrodden. Selfless love is always costly. Fear can't afford it. Pride doesn't understand it, but friends never forget it. I love this one. If love isn't the defining characteristic of our faith, we need to start our way back to where we started. Let me put it this way. If love is not the defining aspect of my faith, I need to reboot. If love isn't what your relationship with Jesus is making you more like, then you need to reboot and restart. I could preach a whole sermon on that, but not this morning. Love's plan is pretty simple. We're supposed to love everybody always. You know, we all want to fit in. Let me just share just a few words from Bob here. He talks about going on a smelly bus to camp, and didn't take long before he figured out who the cool kids were and who the cool kids weren't. And he said, we'd like to think we've left those days behind, but our adult lives can look pretty similar. Most of us still try to huddle up with the cool kids and, in a subtle way, blast it on social media. It's no different than those bus rides. The definition of cool has just been tweaked a little bit. What's crazy is that Jesus spent his whole life engaging the people most of us spend our lives avoiding. He found people who thought they were out, and he said they were in. I wish you could have been there in that classroom when Paul and I both discovered that some of those children weren't sponsored. I had to steel myself because it was, I'm the vice president of this mission, and this has to stop. But I wasn't there to stop it then, and I couldn't stop it then. And some of the other schools did it different ways. But I know that Paul was meant to be there to observe that. And he saw that girl with her head down long before I did, because I was focusing on getting envelopes out to children. But I know that God intended for Paul to see that. Why? Because his heart went out to the one that was being overlooked. This is an amazing line from Goff. He didn't vet the guy on the cross next to him. Vet him. I've heard that term. You know, before we hire someone at a church, we want to vet them. We want to find out what they're about. Put them through some tests. See if they can jump through the hoops. Jesus didn't vet the guy on the cross next to him. He said, I'll see you today in paradise. Amazing. Jesus always did things by way of love. I wish I could share some more on that. I'm going to pass on that. I'll share some more in the future. Jesus called us to love. We have to be known for what we're for and not what we're against. And God is for people. I don't know anything else that God is for in the universe. And I know some people say, well, he's for holiness. God is for people to become like him. He is for his marred creation to be restored. And I don't know anything else that he is about in the universe. I don't. He made it beautiful. Why? So that we could enjoy it. So that we'd have a wonderful place to live. So, when we were in Haiti, one day when we went to Milo, and that's where it all started for me, and some of you know the story of Christian. Christian was the boy at Orphans Incorporated, the place now it's called Good Shepherd, or Bon Berger in French. And he went out to the work site with us every day and sold us bottles of Coke. A lot of you know the story, and I got to know him and on that trip, and he's the one that taught me what an orphan was. I knew what an orphan was. But I was 21 years old, and I'd just graduated from college, and there was a day that he was sad, and he was not being manipulative. He was just having a bad day. And I tried to figure it out, and man, that was a day that my eyes were open. I'm just like, this doesn't have a mom. He doesn't have a dad. He doesn't have anybody in his corner. I went home from there, and when I got to Bible College in California a couple weeks later, they sent me a letter and said, we want to break up the orphanage. It's not good for the kids to be here. They should be in Haitian homes. Would you consider sponsoring a child? I said, absolutely. Sent in my check, and they sent me a picture of Christian. From that time forward, and Christian is 51 years old. My little sponsor child is 51 years old. He's got one son who's studying in the United States, and he approached us towards the end of the trip. Didn't ask for a dime, but asked if we would do something to help get his daughter as far as writing a letter so she could study in the United States. So many stories I could tell you about Christian, but that's germane and important to this story, and I know some of you heard that before. So we went to the school where it all started for him. And the reason I went there, kind of a funny story. When we were there in 85, and a lot of young people that you guys know that are now in their 40s, they're not young people anymore. But anyway, we went there, and we were working on this school. And the third day we were there, the missionaries left. So I'm there for 4 weeks, and I'm the foreman. We're putting up this building. End of the day, the pastor comes by. He wasn't planning on being there because we were supposed to have missionaries, but they flew home. I'm there by myself. I'm 25 years old. And he comes to see the block work. I mean, girls like Marcy Custa, Sue Terpstra, just some people that you would know. They worked really hard, and the front wall was this high. The side wall was that high. The back wall they'd completed. And I was so proud of the kids. I mean, they really got it the third day. The pastor comes back and he looks and he just goes, and you know, you don't have to know French or Creole. Oh, is never what you want to hear. Okay, after you've labored all day, I'm like, what? He's just like, oh, windows, windows. I'm like, what do you mean windows? Put window block in. I'm like, nobody told me window block. Oh, they're over there. I didn't have a blueprint. I didn't know. And so I'm just like, Marcy Custa's going to kill me to tear this wall down. But I said, Pastor, if you want us to take it down, we'll take it down. And he said, okay, just put the other ones in. I was like, okay. So I took some of the team over there to see this because some heard this story. And sure enough, in the front of the building, all the other window blocks start here. But in that first classroom, it starts here. Around the side, it starts here. The back wall, there's no windows. We're around the side, and the window block, you probably don't know what, I know what they are. They're about this tall, and they're concrete. Well, it's a little bit different than concrete, but they're open in the middle. Inside, all the normal in Haiti, you see all these eyeballs looking out and these hands reaching out. We're white people, and they get excited when they see us. And they're reaching out, and I'm just like, sorry about the sweat box, kids. For 35 years, kids have been sweltering in that classroom, and they had no idea that I'm the guy that's responsible for it. But while we're outside, I'm going to ask you to put up that last slide. Last slide doesn't mean I'm anywhere near being done. No, I'll wrap it up soon. The last slide. That man came down to see me. He's the principal of the school. His name is Guy. And I vaguely remember him. But I didn't remember this part of the story. He said, yeah, it all started here. He said, I was in the orphanage with Christian. He blew my mind. He said, I was in the orphanage with Christian and Jacqueline. I said, how many students were there? He said, there were many students. There was only about 10 of us who actually lived there. I said, Christian, and they all know that I'm Christian's papa. Many years ago, we started calling me his papa. I've done a lot of things for him, and he's done a lot of things for me. But Guy said, yeah, it all started here. And I forgot that Jacqueline started out there. I knew that he was connected with Bonebury. I didn't remember him from 1981. I remembered Christian. It was 39 years ago. So Christian would have been the class of, if he graduated from high school, like a lot of us do, he would have been the class of 86. Guy would have been the class of 87. Jacqueline would be the class of 88. I am proud of those three orphans. He's a principal of the school. His English impeccable. Christian is the Haitian who's in charge of the mission just under One American oversees it. And Jacqueline is indispensable to New Hope Missions International. Let me take you back to that story 39 years ago. A man told me that I should stop doing what I'm doing. We should stop doing what we're doing, feeding children, because the world would be better off if they would just die off. Him, that's who he's talking about. He's talking about Jock. He's talking about Christian, people that we know and that we love. There's so many godless ideologies and just ways of looking at things, survival of the fittest. But God had a plan for all these young men. And now they're changing their world. I'm going to cut a few more things out and I'll wrap this up. Most of us like to meet celebrities. One of my favorite Facebook cover photos, profile photos, is me and Sir Charles. Me and Charles Barkley hung out for about 5 minutes one time in Scottsdale, and I got a photo with him. And we are the exact same height, and I like to point that out. But I cannot guard Hakeem Olajuwon, 7-footer. But we like that. We like to associate with the people that are in, that are cool. Put up the passage from Matthew chapter 25 for us. And I want to read the passage that I alluded to earlier, and then I'm going to follow up with the starfish. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, as a celebrity, as the King of Kings, as Sir Charles, as the person that everybody wants to be with, not the guy that came the first time, not he came the first time, wrapped in rags at his birth, until he was wrapped for death. But he got out of those rags too. But you see the difference that when he comes in his glory, he's going to be the celebrity that everyone's going to want to be like, oh, that's the guy I know. I want to be like Jesus. Oh yeah, I was always right with Jesus. And all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. And all the nations will be gathered before him. And he will separate the people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And everyone's going to be like, oh man, I'm his homie. I'm Jesus' buddy. And here's what Jesus has to say. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. And I got to tell you this. I didn't see a lot of sheep in me. But I love baby goats. And I hiked down the Citadel and I got to see some of the tiny little amazing baby goats. I love them. I don't know how those cute little things grow up to look like Satan himself. I don't know. But when you have horns that grow out of your head, it happens. And you get these yellow gold eyes. It's just like they will freak you out. But when they're babies, and maybe that's what it's like sometimes, you know, children are adorable. But we got choices to make when we grow up. Anyway, that's a whole other message, but I had to throw that in there. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed of my Father, take your inheritance. He's going to give us everything he has. That's what Romans 8 says. The kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes. I needed flip-flops. I needed socks. I needed shoes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you gave me a Band-Aid. You gave me something else, and you didn't even think you were doing anything. But you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you, the king, the celebrity, the God Almighty? When did we see you hungry and feed you or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. You did it unto me. I wish I had more time this morning, but I'm going to tell you one more story. See, what Jesus is saying, what he's asking is, did you love me when I was a nobody? Did you love me when I was a nobody? Could you see me in my distressing disguise? At some points, I would just stand back. I showed you the one picture of the one girl, and that picture doesn't do justice to her face, just lit up the room. But I would see as Kelly and Audra were taking the photographs, and sometimes I'd stand over their shoulder and try to get the kids to smile by doing silly, goofy things. And it was like looking at the face of God in these children. Jesus in his distressing disguise. So I know sometimes people will be like, man, Paul, 39 years, you've been faithful, and you just keep hammering away and all this stuff. I have another take on that. I'm the one who's blessed. I'm the one who's blessed to be able to go back and see the fruit. Not just of the seeds that I've planted, and I don't have time to tell some other stories this morning, but so many seeds that have come to fruition. To see Jocelyn, to see Guy, and to see Christian, and to see their children studying in the United States. You know, a lot of people want to get to the United States. These men serve their nation, the least there, and then they send their kids here to study. Whether they come back or not, but they didn't come here. They sent their kids here. You talk about being like Jesus. So Thelma and Paul were both reading Divine Collision, and I waited till they both finished the book. So here's the spoiler alert. I'm going to share my favorite part of the book. Almost towards the end, very close to the end, Jim Gaff talks about the starfish thing and about how at one time he was like the cynical old man. And another point, then he realized he was like the boy throwing them back in. And someone said to him, I think at some point, I'm sure people said, what you've done is amazing. Do you know what he realized? He was the starfish. His involvement got him thrown back. His involvement in Uganda saved his life, helped it to become what it was supposed to be. I read that. That's my story in Haiti. I'm blessed that when I was 21 years old, God scooped me up from the western suburbs. You know, I don't like using the terminology, but yeah, I was a rich kid. And took me down to Haiti and changed the trajectory of my life. And then 39 years later, I can tell you this story. I am honored to be part of the narrative. Let's pray. Father, help us to see Jesus amongst us in his distressing disguise. Help us to realize that, and that's part of it. I don't like hearing people like Thelma and Debbie say, well, what difference are we making? The story from Matthew 25 is we usually have no idea. Sometimes we have to put it into perspective. Encourage your people this morning. Clarendon Hills, it doesn't matter. May we do everything we do by your love. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.